My name is John Carlton, and I'm an alcoholic. And by following the teachings and the philosophy, as I interpret it, of this magnificent program, I have been continuously without a drink of alcohol or any pocket rocket or any mood-changing woman since October 28, 1951. Now, the reason that I mention that date is not to show you what a great guy that I am, all that business. It is simply for the benefit of the newer members who are sitting here this afternoon that I am another example of what this program will do, if you want it. You'll hear a couple of fellas tonight, one tonight and one tomorrow morning. I've enjoyed the speakers, or I call them talkers, up to the present time. I've enjoyed being here. And I feel a good deal like the when I was in professional athletics, I had heard of the main bodies, double wind-ups, and the semi-finals. I was a professional fighter for 5.5 years. I earned my education that way. It's a pretty rough way to get an education. But I boxed many a semi-final, and that's what I'm doing here at your conference right today. I'm the semi-final to your double wind-up. And when you hear Johnny tonight and Jim tomorrow morning, you will understand why I say that. There are a couple of observations that I'd like to make before I attempt to say anything at all about the only illness known where the patient is blamed when the treatment fails. The first observation is that I'm not given to the use of any profanity from behind this podium or any other AA podium. And neither am I given to a lot of these risque jokes, thinking that I might impress you. And you're not going to hear me talk about sex this afternoon, either. At my age, but what I remember of it, it was all right, and I'll still go for it. By now you can readily see that I'm a realist and not a theorist. So much of this theory going on today about the alcoholic, I'm surprised that more people aren't suffering from paralysis from analysis. But anything that I say here this afternoon is my own opinion. I don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. No one is qualified to do that. I've heard a lot of them get up here and you'd think they'd written a book, but none of us are qualified to do that. And I'm not here to preach any sermon of appeasement or to tell you what to do. And I'm not here to carry on Jimmy Swaggart But God, he hasn't done too well lately. So that's right. But I am simply here to tell you what happened, what it's like, and what it was like. Well, because of my inability to handle alcohol, the hell with the symptoms, you can have the symptoms and all that. I never took a drink in my life till I was 26 years old, and never drank tea or coffee, never smoked. But that's your business. Now, I don't know anything about the alcoholic adult children of alcoholics, and that's all right. I never saw a drink of booze in my home. My father and mother never touched it. So I don't know anything about that. But I think before I finish, and it's going to take me just about a minute and a half to tell you my whole story. And I'm not going into any morbid details of it either, because I don't think that you're interested in the morbidity of my drinking any more than I'm interested in the morbidity of yours. I'm interested in just one thing as I stand here this afternoon, hoping and saying a prayer before I came in here that I might say something that will help some other guy or gal in finding a new lifestyle, and that's it. What it was like, because, as I say, my inability to handle alcohol, I was forced to stand on the curbstone of life and watch the throng pass me by during some of the most lucrative and productive years of my entire career. In the last 6.5 years, I traveled under an assumed name. No one knew who I was or where I was from. I don't know how they could miss this action of mine, but no one knew who I was or where I was from. There was a little word, three words, that played a great deal in my downfall. In those last 6.5 years, as far as I was concerned, it was hell on earth. Because I refused to finish reading the story of Jack Alexander in the Saturday Evening Post in 1941 as I sat behind my desk as the senior member of my own law firm. And later on, I held many positions of trust. A couple of them, I was a special assistant to the United States Attorney General in the Criminal Division of the Department of Justice. And I had the honor of being the personal political representative of that great Texan, John Nance Garner, the last 2 years that he was the vice president. But in 1941, when I was reading the story, or started to read the story of Jack Alexander, he wasn't talking about me. He was talking about the guys down on the docks, down on the wharf, the guys on the row, the mumbling, stumbling bum. He wasn't talking about the great John Elliot. No, no. So I just tossed it one side. Why? A little word called ego. And I dripped with it. I wanted everyone to know who I was, who I'd been, and all this. No. And I had to come among you folks that I wanted nothing to do with because of those three universities behind me and 2 degrees. What could you folks tell me how to live? Why, the idea. So I didn't have any interest in that story. And I'm not proud to stand here this afternoon and tell you folks that before I came to you, I was brought to you. I thought I'd been grabbed with the fuzz. I thought I'd been arrested. I had been many times. I had never been doing any of those long jaunts, but I had been in those lesser cans for some time, different times. But it was you who said to me, if you want this, we can't do it for you. And if you have got sense enough left to realize that your life is made up of but four things, thoughts, acts, habits, and character, if you want to continue to think like a drunk, you're going to act like one, your habits will follow your acts, your character follows your habits, and once you can go on living the life of a drunk, if you want to. We're not going to bother you. We're not beating any drums. You go to whatever church you want to go to. I'll go to mine. We'll all walk along together. This idea of denominational affairs coming into the program of AA. Now, why, we're not interested in denominational matters at all. If you're a Catholic, fine. If you're a Baptist, that's all right. I don't. Good. You go to your church. I'll go to mine. Because to me, whatever church you go to, and I question it, that's like me asking you, well, which is better, exhale or inhale? But criticism is the lot of Alcoholics Anonymous, the same as it is anything that is good. Our churches are criticized, great leaders are criticized, and Alcoholics Anonymous is criticized too, don't you think it isn't? Well, so was Galileo. Galileo was nearly put to death for his views. They said the Wright brothers never would fly, that the air was reserved for the birds. And many of them said that Columbus, hundreds of them, that Columbus was crazy. I don't know anything about Columbus except what I studied as a youngster. And I don't know whether he was an alcoholic or not, but by golly, he had all the traits of one, I'll tell you that. He didn't know where he was going when he left home. He didn't know where he was when he got there. When he got back, he didn't know where the hell he'd been. The woman paid for the whole trip. I noticed that, and I know, I've inquired, there are a lot of Al-Anons here. And I wanted no part of Al-Anon for the first 9 years that I was in and around the program. Quite a difference being dry and being sober in my book. That's just my opinion. Sometimes it don't amount to much, but that's my opinion. I'm entitled to my opinion. And I'm not so naive to stand here this afternoon and expect everybody here to agree with me. No. But as long as I remain within the perimeter of the decency of this magnificent program that saved my life, it is my prerogative to express my opinion, and it is your prerogative to accept or reject whatever that I may say. Now, you know, when you get to the point that no one can tell you anything, you are in trouble. And that was my great failing, if you might call it that. I refused to listen to people that wanted to help me. And at the height of my career, fellas would say to me, John, you're drinking too much. Why don't you cut down a little? And I'd thank them for their interest. And they wouldn't be from here to the door before I'd be saying to myself, why don't he mind his own business? I don't need him to tell me what to do. I refused to listen. And because of my refusal to listen, I became a thief. And so did you. The most of you, if you're a real alcoholic. I became a thief because I stole from those that I loved the most their right to happiness. I was a guy that always complained that roses had thorns instead of being grateful. The thorns had roses. Vanderbilt University was graduated from the Boston University School of Law and spent 2 years in the Harvard Graduate School while I was coaching there for 2 years. And I'm going to tell you something about these intellectual gorillas, so-called. They're going to tell you everything now, you know. I mentioned that I only have 2 degrees. But over here in any of your hospitals, you've got little things called thermometers. And they've got more degrees on those than we'll ever have. And you know why they stick those thermometers sometimes. And that's just what you can do with these intellectual gorillas that's going to expound all of this theory on you, as far as I'm concerned. Herbert Spencer once said that there was a certain principle which was a bar to all information and proof against any argument that may leave a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt before investigation. And that's exactly me. No, I didn't want to know anything about my drinking, and I didn't want to know anything about a deal called Alcoholics Anonymous either. My God, that AA, that could stood for Akron Acrobats, as far as I was concerned. Now, I don't want you to think that I have any desire to stand here and any stand-up comedian. Not at all. Not at all. But I recall reading what Voltaire once said, I may not agree with a word that you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. And I believe it was John Greenleaf Whittier who said, of all sad words of tongue and pen, the saddest of them all, it might have been. How many of us, oh, here's a great guy, she's a great girl, if that or this, it might have been, yeah. It's very easy. And I don't want any one of you to think for 1 second, because I have been away from booze the length of time that I've mentioned, that I'm standing up here feeling that I am qualified to be the judge, jury, and executioner of a single one of you, because I'm not. And I don't care if they've been in here 45 years. We are not one bit different than the newest member who sits here this afternoon in this respect. I am nearly 37 years with continuous sobriety, but I'm exactly like you. I'm one drink away from a drunk. You know, nobody cares to admit to personal powerlessness. I don't care who it is. But by golly, personal powerlessness, when we once make that admission, we find that that is the bedrock, as it tells us. I read the big book just as much now. My old sponsors ever heard me say, I read the big book, they belted me in the mouth. I studied the big book. And it tells us that admittance of personal powerlessness is the bedrock to a purposeful and a happy life. It's necessary that we undergo the pains of alcoholism before we get sober. And it is necessary that we experience emotional turmoil before serenity. Oh, I could accept that intellectually, of course, sounded well. But emotionally, do you think I would accept it? Of course not. Of course not. After I was in a while, and I started to be a sponsor, so-called, one or two of the guys, and I'd get all hepped up, you know. Now, everybody isn't ready for this deal. Let's not kid ourselves. And I'd get all hepped up over some guy that I was working with, and by golly, he's going to make it. He's going to make it. And the next thing, somebody said, "Did you see Tommy?" And I said, "No, look." And here he'd come. Down the street. Tommy wasn't ready. And that's a good deal the case with a lot of us that have tried this, not made it, gone out, come on back. You betcha. As long as you keep coming back, you got a chance. It reminds me of the guy down here in Dallas that was the expert vacuum cleaner salesman. This is not being ready. And he had a racket going that he'd read that Dallas Morning News and he'd pick out a house that was being opened and up he'd go. And he was a very fine appearing fellow and he selected this house and this particular day and this lady met him at the door. She was very gracious, brand new place. And he started his pitch, and she said, "I'm not ready." And he kept talking about the things relative to his new machine. And she kept saying, "I'm not ready." But by this time, he's in the hallway, and he's still going, and she's still saying, "I am not ready." Well, by this time, they're in this gorgeous living room. Oh, it was a beautiful thing. Carpet, wall-to-wall carpeting, it was beautiful. Now he sees that he's losing the battle, but he's determined he's not going to lose the war. So he reaches in his pocket, and he takes out a handful of dry hoss manure, and he threw it right in the middle of that beautiful wall-to-wall carpeting, friend. And that poor woman like to had a conniption fit. And with that, he says, "Madam, don't you worry a bit. If my machine don't pick up every bit of that, I will eat it." And with that, she started for the kitchen. He said, "Just a minute, where are you going?" She says, "To get the salt and pepper, because this house hasn't been wired for electricity yet." As I told you, the last 6.5 years of my drinking of some, probably 17, 18 years. The last 6.5 years, God acts in many mysterious ways. And when you hear these guys say, I never cry. Well, I'm going to tell you, I cried. I've cried many a time. And I was walking and sleeping in the alley, or down on the docks and riding the freight, eating in the jungle. And when I'd be by myself, I'd cry. You don't have to be a baby to cry. When that going got tough in the Marine Corps in World War II, yeah, not the Spanish-American, World War II. Sure, I cried. This tough ex-professional fighter. So you don't have to be a baby to cry. I cried because I wanted to go home. I wanted to see that my wife again and that little boy that I walked away from. But I couldn't. I couldn't. And finally, to this day, I don't know what possessed me. I went home. And I got there 4 days before Polly was divorcing me. She should have left me years before she did. God rest her soul. Beautiful gal. Magnificent mother. And I said to an acquaintance of mine, what possessed me to go to that courthouse? I don't know. But there's no contest, of course. Standing in a pair of shoes, I could step on a chew of gum and tell you what flavor it was. Strictly battered out, mentally, physically, every way, every conceivable way. And something prompted me to say to an old acquaintance of mine, Edward, you ask Fiedel the court out that I might have custody of Johnny 30 days out of the year. I don't know what I would have done with it if it had been granted. And ladies and gentlemen, in the very same courtroom where I had stood for nearly 21 years, where I had tried many and many a major case, where I had stood with respect and with dignity, I heard the court say no. He's neither mentally nor physically capable of having custody of his son 30 minutes, to say nothing of 30 days. And I walked again. And I'm walking along the street in Portland, Maine, on the 28th day of October, and I'm not going to get into a long detail in this thing. But I'm walking along the street the 28th day of October. Didn't have a drink that day. No, sir. And where this fella came from, I have no idea. I think he must have come from a doorway. And he braced me. And he extended his hand to me and he said, hello, Johnny, how are you? Where are you going? And I figured that he was the fuzz, the cop, you know. One of the cops, I figured he's a plain clothes guy. Hell, I'd been picked up so many times during those 6 years with every conceivable thing, you know, drunkenness and disturbing the peace and those lesser lights. And when he asked me where I was going, I answered him honestly. I said, I don't know, and I don't care a damn where I'm going. What do you think he said? Come on with me. There's a bunch of guys know you, and they'd love to see you. Were they only fellas that see me would be down in the queue, down in the jail. I knew where that jail was. But we didn't go that way. We got in an elevator, and I asked him, I said, where are we going, Johnny? And he, where are we going, Art? His name was. He told me his first name was Art. Where are we going? He said, up to the Alcoholics Anonymous Club. The guys like to see you. Here's how I came to you. Now, we all come in differently. I didn't come in here that I wanted to get sober, and I didn't intend to stay sober, and I didn't want to stay sober either. I came in first because I thought I was pinched, and when I found out that I wasn't, as I can see that elevator now, as I get off the elevator and walking into this room, great, I'll grab one of those suckers for enough for a bottle of Sneaky Pete or Sweet Lucy or Bayhurst. Long relegated from the bourbon set now. Oh, yes. Long relegated as a member of the board of the House Committee of my country club. Oh, yes. And you know what? I couldn't find one of those friends. I never saw any of those so-called friends. No, No one wanted anything to do with me but a bunch of guys up there in Portland, Maine. And they gathered around me, and they're talking, and giving me conversation, and I'm not interested in conversation. I'm interested in a belt. I want a shot. And I saw this thing that looked like a bar, and I come in up in the corner. As I come in, I braced that a little, you know. So help my God, I did not see that coffee pot, and the thing was as big as that door, that coffee pot. And I said, "I'm there." Now I'm getting nowhere with my conversation, because they were just ahead of me all the time. They'd been where I was. And finally, in desperation, they give me all that. You know, Johnny. Starting to shake now. You know. And one of the fellows said, "Johnny, would you like a drink?" "Oh, ho," they said. They waltzed me up to this, what I thought was the bar. And so help me, I've never drunk so much coffee before or since. God. Next morning, I left for Texas. Guy was coming down to Texas. His name was Johnny McIntosh. Wanted somebody to ride with him. I don't have a demo. I don't have a dime. He said, "I didn't ask you. I want somebody to ride with me." Well, I thought I was going to ride in a comfortable car anyway, you know. And if he'd been going to Baffinland, it'd been all right. I'd gone. Hell, I didn't care where he's going. So I got the first taste of AA honesty. He invited me to go home with him, and then he said, "We leave early in the morning." And I said, "No, I don't want to go home with her. Wife, there." "Oh, no, no," he said. "No, she's gone to Boston. She and my daughter went to Boston this afternoon." "Oh, that was good. Sure, go home. Nice flop. Why not? Going to leave early in the morning." We go up there, and he starts fiddling with that key in the door. And the door opens. And we're standing there, but his wife. And he gives her this. Now, he's there. I've been getting this shot of... "Got to be honest, John." Jesus telling a criminal lawyer, 21 years, "You got to be honest. I'd take your eye out and tell you you look better without it." You know, but I'm getting that honesty bit during that time, and I went to one meeting that night. And here the door opens, and his wife's standing there, and he says, "Oh, honey, I thought you'd gone to Boston." He like to broke his neck, yo. Well, it may sound funny now, but it wasn't then. So anyway, we don't come in a touring car. I ride 2,645 miles from Portland, Maine to Dallas, Texas, in a panel truck sitting on an orange crate for a seat with a blanket in the back of the car. And I'm cold turkeying that stuff I told you. Sneaky Pete and Sweet Lucy, Bayhaw, Smoke. Now, you talk about being sick, and you fellas want me to come and call on you when you... I hope to God, and I mean this, if I ever refuse to go on the 12-step call, I hope I get drunk. And I hope if any of you ever refuse, if you're real alcoholics, ever refuse to go on a 12-step call, that you'll get drunk too. But I'm beginning to see things in the clouds and hairs coming out the ends of my fingers and the stream of blood. I thought it was blood. And Johnny was a longshoreman, and what in the world did he ever came to Dallas, Texas for to work in building an airplane plant? I'll never know. He was a longshoreman, been all his life, and somebody hit him a shot in the nose with the belaying pin, and it was all over his face. He had a worse-looking kisser than mine, and it left him with a little impediment. Now, I'm not casting any aspersions or impediments, but Johnny Henwin. Now, the farther we come on and come on and come on in that panel truck and bouncing, and I can't drink anything. I can't drink water. I can't drink nothing. Nothing. I never drank nothing. Never ate anything. And we're coming over those mountains in Tennessee, and this was before they were blacktopped. And finally, by God, I thought I was going to die. I really did. And some more of this sweetness and light of AA that I got when I come in here. That old pump's going up, boom, 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 boom. It would stop. It would almost stop. You know, boom, 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 boom. And finally, this tough ex-fighter and this tough ex-Marine and this brilliant lawyer. No, he wasn't smart any longer, and he wasn't tough any longer either. And I said to Johnny, "Johnny, I've got to have a drink. I'm going to die. Thank God I can see it now." And what do you think that sweet AA said to me? He said, "You're going to die, huh?" I'm serious about this. I'm not trying to be funny. I just tell you this. He said, "You're going to die, huh?" I said, "Yeah, Johnny, if I don't get a drink, I'm going to die." He says, "Well, go ahead and die." He says, "What the hell good are you? You're no good to yourself or anybody else. I don't see anybody laying along the side of the road here. If you croak, I'll drop you off at the next town. Shut up." Honesty and oh, great guys in it, yeah. Well, he stopped at a grocery store, one of those old mountain grocery stores beside the road. And out he comes with a quart of ice cold milk. My God, I'll never forget it. Now, I hadn't had anything in my stomach. I couldn't. Except a little strings of blood, you know, try to. Jesus, I grabbed that quart of milk and downed it. Ooh, I never took it away. Yes, sir, down she went. Oh, didn't that feel good? But when that hit and come up, you could have shot pool with it in a bounce. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. But the length of time that it takes to change the direction of a man or a woman's life is the same length of time that it takes to change an idea. Some it takes a little longer. It took me quite a while. Others it very quickly. Reminds me of the fellow that was walking up and down. This is an old story, but if you haven't heard it, it's not old. And this guy is expecting his wife to have a baby any time over in the sister's hospital. And he's over there in the waiting room. He's walking back and forth. And Mother Superior sees him, and she says, "Just take it easy now, young man. All of you fathers act the same when your wives are having the first baby." He says, "Well, sister," sat down, "this isn't the first one." Says, "This is the 10th one." "Oh," she said, "glory be to God." He says, "Sister, I noticed I'm not a Catholic. I'm a Protestant." "Oh," and with that, she turned on a heel and started down the ward and met this little nun that had just come on that afternoon. And she called her over to show you how quickly a person can change their mind. Called her over. The Mother Superior said to her, "Sister, keep your eye on that tall man up there. He's a sex maniac." She changed her mind. I was a great guy to get even. I was always going to get even with everybody. I'll get even with them. I remember who hurt me back there in New England. You bet. I'll get even with them. My old sponsor, God rest his soul, Dick Breen and Ford Porter. I had two of them. I guess they had to start to take two of them. I and me. And old Dick got tired of me using that expression. I'll get even. All I want is to get this stink pad straightened out. I remember him. And Breen said to me, I'm sick and tired of listening to you going to get even with people. Did you ever stop to think in that brilliant mind of yours? Oh, I couldn't say anything to him. I didn't sit down. He says, did it ever occur to you, if you want to get even with somebody who has been good to you? That's why I'm here this afternoon. I'm trying to get even to the members of Alcoholics Anonymous who saved my life. I don't care. I'm not, as I say, you people can have their own opinions of things. I became an alcoholic because I drank too much booze too often. That's number one. And I don't give a damn how many symptoms I had. I could have had all the symptoms in all respect to our big book. The symptoms. But by God, I never got drunk till I took a drink. And I became an alcoholic because I drank too much booze. And that's good enough. And I'm entitled to that opinion. Intelligence and humility make great partners, provided that you keep humility first. But what about? We hear this expression often, and I go for it, that we in AA love everybody. We love everybody, provided that we do not wish anybody any ill will. So, I wish no one any ill will in here, so I love all of you. And that's the way that I look at the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'll tell you, there's a hell of a lot of them in AA that I don't like. And I know a lot of them don't like me either. And that's okay. But as long as I don't wish them any ill will, I love them. I've heard these guys get up here and say, well, you know, before I come into AA, I never liked cops. But after I've been in AA, I have learned to love them. Well, I've got news for any of you boys at the constabulary, if you're here. If you are a member of this fellowship, you bet I'm in your corner. But if you're not, then you're here to learn or find out something or be inquisitive or see if you're investigating somebody. I've got to be in AA a hell of a lot longer than these 36 years, nearly 37 now, will be next month. I've got to be in there a hell of a lot longer than that before I learn to love you. And I'll tell you that. And the reason is because I represented some of you guys. And I'm not divulging any confidence. And I know how you work, too. Because I worked with you. So, anyway, if you remember, fine. And if you're not, good, I won't bother you, you won't bother me, and that's fine. But I don't love you, and you might as well know it.
Please. Please turn your tape. Do not rewind. Turn your tape and continue on side two.